This podcast does contain spoilers, so if you're okay with that, listen on. If not, pause the podcast, go watch the movie we're about to talk about, and come on back.
All right, sweet.
Excuse me.
Brian, over here. Hey.
Pardon me.
Why don't you have the popcorn? It's starting!
Woo!
Hey! Shut up and listen to the podcast. Hey!
There's a lot out there to see. This is what we watched.
And then we pop up a video linking to, like, someone describing how video works, I guess, so Jeff understands how the camera works.
All right, attempt number two, what we watched.
What we watched. Thanks, everyone out in Brussels. We're shooting up the charts out there. What's up, everyone?
Thank you, Belgium.
I closed it. There's another country in Belgium also. I forgot what it was, though, that also has some downloads. Hey, I've always wanted to go to Belgium. Hey, are there any conventions in Belgium?
Any podcast conventions?
Hey, we will be there. Absolutely. You guys want to see us? We'll go. Let's do it.
Let's go.
Live show.
There's one dude that's just really obsessed with us.
As long as he pays for us to get out there.
Yes. Hey, totally. But then, so, Jeffrey, 1 week in Belgium, but you have to stay in just this random dude's house who has, like, a full family, and you're, like, staying in, like, you know, you're, like, sleeping on the couch.
Okay.
You still going?
Can I leave the house?
If they're doing stuff, you can. If not, you got to help around the house.
So I have to do stuff with them?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes.
Ugh.
But it's a free trip out there. You don't have to pay for... They'll buy you food also. But you have to hang out with
family. I'd
want to
know what they're into
first. They have some
first.
Toddlers.
Like, if they want to show me places, cool. Let's
kinky
do it.
Stuff? Oh, I don't know.
No, I can convince them. I can convince them that they would want to explore their own city. Yeah.
I don't know, Brandon. Can barely convince me to do stuff. Interesting. I don't know if I'd do that. It's a lot.
I would. Yeah. 100%. I'll go.
I'll just kidnap them. I mean, it's basically kidnapping. I would just escape from them.
All right, what we watched.
Woo!
Woohoo!
Third time's a charm.
Is this the official attempt?
Movie club.
But this is a podcast.
War.
This is a movie review podcast. It's called What We Watched. It's for movie lovers. It's for TV lovers. And it's for those who like traveling to foreign places.
God, he added the second it's. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Oh, you don't like that one.
Jeff weigh in. He does two different ones. Hey, sorry, that was a good one. Blah, blah, blah. We'll talk about that in a second. Jeffrey, he does two different ones. He either does it's a podcast for movie lovers, TV lovers, and something, or it's a podcast for movie lovers. Wait, this is a podcast. It's for, wait, actually, what do you say? Say it again, Brandon.
I say? So welcome to What We Watch. This is a podcast for movie lovers, for TV lovers. No, yeah, that doesn't sound right. This is a podcast for movie lovers. It's for TV lovers as well. I don't know. Sometimes I just...
Nope, that's definitely not it. As yeah. well.
That extra it didn't sound right.
Now I'm thinking about it. I was just going with it. I was just mindlessly entertaining our Brussels audience.
You'll forget next week too.
I will, absolutely.
I also, it's definitely different. You add a couple words before like the TV thing. And I like the anyways. Hey, War Month continuing.
Ooh, we're continuing with War. We're finishing with War Month. Well, we're semi-finishing with War Month. If anyone still wants us to do anything else, let us know like now. Like right
if
now.
It was,
right.
If
now.
It was if it was 1 year from now, I would say the next like natural, because we went from World War One to World War Two to Vietnam to, it would have been perfect to do Civil War. Like that would have been the next, and especially because like this one has like photography and kind of into it and journalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It would have been such a nice rollover.
Oh yeah. That would have been great. Well,
but these guys were more soldiers that were also did photos. Whereas the last ones was photographers.
Yes.
Less.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like loosely connected. I'm not saying they.
No, I made a note somewhere about it.
Civil War.
Yes, but this one, today, we're semi-finishing War Month with Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket.
So, this is the first time, Jeff, you've actually seen it now. Matt, you have seen it for the first time in a long time. This is my...
Yes, I did. I think I definitely forgot some stuff.
Yeah, same. This is my second time, I think, watching the whole thing. And then, like, I've picked apart scenes, I think, for school, but I don't remember. I think it was early in the movie. It's been a while since I've had to think about it, like, critically.
Well, hey, this is your pick for War Month, so since we forgot last week, why'd you pick this, Brandon?
So I picked
all the
this
good ones were up. No.
Whoop.
Nothing, nothing. I was answering saying, for you. All the good ones are picked.
Yeah, because the pick that I wanted was taken. So I went with the second best war movie of all time that, you know, really gets us into the Vietnam War and kind of just without saying that it's good or it's bad. Like, it doesn't really feel too propaganda-y. It just throws you into the action. And really kind of takes you through the perspective of a soldier in that time. When I saw it, I really enjoyed how immersive it was, and the acting I thought was phenomenal when I first saw it, and I really enjoyed it. So, and especially now knowing that, Jeff, you hadn't seen it, I think it was a good pick.
Yeah. You said second best war movie. You rated both Jojo Rabbit and 1917 at like 10 or something, didn't you?
I did not rate Jojo Rabbit at a 10.
Oh. No, he did 9. Remember, he
so then this
it.
Is the third best movie, probably.
So this has to be either 9.255 or 7.5. So hey, we narrowed down our guesses moving forward. Jeff.
There we go.
We got to remember that when we get to the end. Yeah. And I reveal my other spreadsheet that has been tracking our guesses of Brandon's rating. No, that'd be awesome.
Now, that actually would be an interesting spreadsheet for sure, because you guys have gotten really close. You've hit it a couple of times. Matt's gotten it right more than Jeff has. I know that.
Unfortunately.
I know that.
So, Full Metal Jacket, Stanley Kubrick, legend, absolute legend, absolute legend. What's something you said, Brandon, you forgot some stuff, too. I honest to God, I forgot that Joker was in both. Like, there was a dude that connected both of them, because in my mind I've been just living with they're just like two different movies, basically, it feels like. The early one, the later one, frankly. This is the best example of how much hair can really do for you, really change your world, because holy crap.
Different human,
like a
being
different person.
I forgot most of the stuff about him being a photographer and like being like a journalist, and that was why he or what he was doing in Vietnam. I completely forgot that entire subplot and that occupation. So that was interesting to kind of revisit. And then seeing that, obviously, the subtext and the themes with, you know, again, with war is bad and like what it means to, you know, start propaganda, especially in the newsroom where his superior was like, change the story, add in a kill, you know, give it a happy ending. And that really, you know, wasn't the truth. And it's not right. How...
Well, combined with the fact that he said, we're here to, like, tell the news to people and the facts or something. He even, like, said stuff like that after he said to, you know, just say that we made a kill or something.
Right. Exactly.
Super weird.
Very interesting. But I think that is also very present in today's society as well of, you know, what... can we trust when it comes to news stories and when it comes to the media telling us how something happened, you know, and so it's just it's a very layered movie as well.
You said it was pretty neutral. I felt like it leaned pretty anti-war to me personally when I was watching it. Not like heavily, not like it was like, super, you know, anti-anti, any stuff. But I felt like if I had to pick, I would definitely personally pick that it was anti in the way of like what he was showing. And maybe at the time he was like, you know, it wasn't as bad and stuff. So showing the stuff that he showed now and, you know, gives you a different feeling. So it's not as anti, but it felt very just like showing us kind of. I had a little bit of who are the people that I hated in Silver Linings Playbook? I kind of just hated these people, some of these people, and I was just like...
Yeah. Nobody was perfect.
We'll get into it, but my big thing was like, it's just entertainment-wise. It was good. It was a well-made movie. Everything was thought out, and it was well-made, but I just didn't... My entertainment and enjoyable level was not fantastic. It was just a little lower, I would say, than the other ones, because...
These are very, you know, abrasive people. These are very abrasive human beings. There's a lot of guys who are like, no, I'd rather be here because I can do what I want. I can say what I want. I can express myself in a violent nature and not have to worry about being, you know, reprimanded for that, or, you know, worry about if it's the right thing or the wrong thing. I can just blow off steam, or I can just, you know, take it out on people who look different than me.
That was
you froze.
Now we experienced the same thing.
You froze to us, and it's just so funny that I was looking down and you froze.
You stopped mid sentence. I was just like,
it was very it was poignant for a second, and then it was just like, what? okay, I'm sorry.
You're good. I don't know if I can repeat everything verbatim. So the first take, fine. We'll use that in the audio.
But no, on top of that, though, like I agree with you guys. Like it, a lot of these characters were crazy. And I mean, I think over, like, I also agree with you, Matt, to the extent that it leans towards an anti-war kind of genre. But I also think it's more generalized in the sense of it's not only about how brutal war is in a physical sense, but on the mental sense as well. Yep. Like all these people were broken in so many different ways. And that's what really focused on in the first half of the movie. And then you get to see a plethora of more people and how they got affected currently and in the past and whatever out in Vietnam.
Yeah. I mean, it was really interesting to see our main character Joker, see him break, basically, you know, what it took to break this human being. And at first it was, you know, hey, I am a jokester, you know, I'm going to make a wisecrack. During a really serious, tense moment, get my, you know, my ass torn out, or chewed out, or whatever you want to say. I know I fucked that
rip
up.
Rip that ass out.
get your ass chewed out, by the drill sergeant. And then, you know, rise kind of through the ranks already. But then even with, when Pyle, was, you know, kept fucking up and everyone ganged up on him, you know, Joker was the last one to beat up on Pyle. And it really kind of, you know, it took him a moment. And then
he did extra.
He definitely did. He definitely did. But he definitely, you know, he struggled with that. And so he kind of broke a little bit there. Then he goes to Vietnam and he's kind of reverted back and he's still this kind of lighthearted, you know, smile on his face. Still joking around, you know, clearly hasn't been changed that much, by the effects of going to Vietnam. And then we see him actually, you know, get tested and see his friends die and see, you know, people he cares about, pass away. And then he makes the choice in the very end to kill this little girl. And then there's that 1,000-yard stare. He's finally broken and he's finally, completely a changed man now. And it's just that was the most interesting, journey to get to see for sure.
Was that girl young? How old was she?
I thought so.
She seemed like,
really? Yeah, I just misjudged it. I thought she was just a woman.
Yeah, she seemed younger, but I can get what you're saying. Like sometime, I don't know. The age seems like it could go either way.
Now she's currently old.
I took it as she was like 14, maybe 12, 13, 14.
Oh, I didn't know about that young for me. But I thought maybe like later teens or early 20s.
Yeah, young for sure. Because I mean, same kind of the same thing with 1917, right? They sent, you know, teenagers out. They sent 14-year-olds out off to war. And it was, you know, no big deal, or it wasn't really something to think about. Obviously in Jojo Rabbit, it was a satire version of that and sending literal children out there. But I think in Vietnam, I'm pretty sure I've heard stories about the same thing. Like they had child soldiers. They had kids going out there and you know, actually attacking people.
We have. what was your favorite part of this then, Brandon? Like story, acting, because I think my cinema might be the most cinematically.
Yeah, cinematically was great. Favorite aspect of this, it's really hard because I love the writing, like the humor of it is fantastic. But I also really like the acting, and I think everyone sunk into their characters really well. Cinematically and cinematography wise was also stunning and really, really interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. So I'd probably go writing as my top getter, and thing that I kind of latched onto the most. I mean, even early on, like I also forgot how funny this movie is. Like I was laughing. I was kind of with Private Pyle for the first, I don't know, the entire half of the movie where he's just berating everybody in the worst way possible to try and dehumanize them. That to me was just hilarious.
Interesting.
I don't
remember laughing out loud a whole lot during it.
Which, what's he? Are these guys too intelligent or intelligent enough? Did he like them more than Oakjaw?
I don't remember. Were they too human?
I absolutely agree with you that since we're talking about the major or whatever his name is, he's just like he was like their consultant, right? And he was nailing it, so they just put him in there, right?
Maybe
Brandon. Oh, okay, so I'm pretty positive he was originally just on the set to like give instructions and consult and be like, this is what normally we do, this is what we don't.
Gotcha.
And whenever he was doing the examples, they absolutely loved it. So then they just decided, why doesn't he just play the part?
Yeah.
So then that he put him in, which he did a fantastic job. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, there was some funny stuff that he said.
I have a note of just wondering if that was all off the top of his head or scripted.
Yeah, right?
Like there were many lines.
I think it was mostly because I thought he was a real Marine instructor right. that did that. So I mm-hmm. think he had, I think, a long, large pile of stuff he did in the past.
Because like one of them I remember was like, I'm going to gouge out your eyes and then fuck your eye hole or something. And just like, all these crazy, like those are so specific.
So specific.
suck a golf ball through a hose.
Through a garden hose.
Or is it a straw?
Oh,
I'm trying to think some of the other. I mean, like it was good. I think they went too far here and there personally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I get, oh, that's what kind of people talk how guys talk to each other. I'm like, some people.
I think it's less how guys talk to each other, but I think that it was definitely at least the way that people viewed the military at the time of again, like you are mm-hmm. subhuman and you are, you know, you every single mm-hmm. thing that could be wrong with you is wrong with you.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's why I say is I think technically, I think he did, I think he 100% did what he wanted. Mm-hmm. I understand the breaking down of people, turning them into a unit, the military. I think they portrayed that stuff well mm-hmm. also. The only thing, it was just how entertaining it was to watch physically.
That's fair.
And sit there for 2 hours and just, like, some of the stuff, you know, it's like, I'm trying to think what movie it was. It was like
a little bit like Raging Bull where it was just hard to watch this character just over and over and over.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit less to me, less. It's more of like Silver Linings Playbook where it's kind of just annoying. I'm like, I didn't enjoy that. Or like an old movie Casino with Robert De Niro. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good movie. But like when you watch it, God, they're also racist. And I'm just like, God, this really does. It's less enjoyable when I got to watch all these racist people.
Yeah.
Like, but that's mm-hmm. that's how everyone talked to each other. I'm like, I hear you. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have done that. I'm just, I just don't, you know, enjoy it as much.
Right. It's not your cup of tea. Right. And there's, honestly, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that that's better that you don't enjoy that kind of stuff, to be honest with you.
So let's talk more about the first, what was it? It's like the first hour or something, or first like 45 minutes maybe.
Mm-hmm. The first half of the movie, just in general, like there's the two stories, right?
Yes, pretty much. If that's what it felt like, mm-hmm. It was. I mean, everything this the Kubrick shot was visually. I thought I loved the lines that he had. I loved them in like big groups being synchronized, and all lined up. I thought that was gorgeous framing. Like, there's a ton of frames that I was like, that's just like straight up gorgeous.
Yeah, especially when they're in the bunker and they're like, you know, standing at attention on both sides, mm-hmm. and we have that you know, those tracking shots straight down the middle is absolutely just stunning to watch.
Yeah, that's interesting that because the ones that stuck out to me the most were the ones where one of the main ones was early on where it was like sunset with the colors and silhoetted of them like climbing ropes and climbing things. And
yeah, that was so
that
cool.
Shot was gorgeous. And then the night scenes stuck out to me too, where like the interesting like old school cast of blue kind of, and then some harsh mood lighting coming through the windows and shadows.
Interesting. Do you think that was day to night? Because I agree with it. It was very blue now that you mention it.
It could have been.
It looked good to me.
It could have been.
It didn't even bother me in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. We know it wasn't then.
I want to say that what like it almost probably wasn't day to night, just because they had some heavier shadows in that bathroom.
Mm, I hear you.
Like when the
because I assume they shot all of that the same. Well, the main guy. I know exactly.
What do I call him?
That's why it's kind of confusing.
Yeah.
It's confusing when you roll over into the second part and I barely even recognize. Thankfully, like, you know, because they called him Joker. That was the only time I was like, oh, that is that guy. Because, you know, you kind of forget, like, the beginning of the movie, an hour, 45 minutes, whatever it is, it's like 27 minutes into the movie before they actually, like, have a exchange of dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah, before somebody else speaks.
Well, like other people kind of spoke, but like because he was like talking to them and the major would respond. But there was rarely like back and forth.
Yeah,
like
most of the dialogue was sir and yes.
Yes, correct. Which also later in the movie, they ditched the first sir. So then they just were doing the end sir, which kind of so.
And one guy said, I, sir.
I, sir. That's when he skull fucked him. He skull fucked that guy.
I think it was Snowball, but.
Another line that I had written down, you climb like old people fuck.
One of the ones I wrote down was what is your major malfunction, numbnuts? Was there a lot of pop culture things that came from this movie? Like that and like the bars of soap and the socks and shit? Like, was that all originate here?
Well, I don't know if the soap, the bars and soap, I think that's like something they did, was a real thing. Okay. Maybe this is when it got like introduced into the
pop culture
mass,
and stuff.
I think,
yeah.
Correct. Yeah. So like introduction to pop culture, I think so. But then there's other like I don't think I remember realized sucky sucky $5.
Me
I
so know, horny, like, I me love you long time.
I referenced that from other movies, but I didn't realize that those were referenced like from this.
Yeah, same.
There's something else too. I forgot what the other one was that I was like, oh, is that where this I forgot to look it up. Born Killer or Born to Kill or whatever it was. I'm assuming in Planet of the Apes, which one was it? War, I want to say, maybe, where they were like sneaking up and they had like Monkey Killer and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if those are references to that.
Homage?
I think
maybe.
So.
Maybe.
I think that's,
sorry, homage, whatever the hell.
Yeah, get your terminology correct. Yes. Thank you, Professor Jeff. We appreciate that lecture. Matt, I think it absolutely is reference, homage, callback, you know, throw back, what other adjectives?
Fromage.
Fromage. Yes, I think that it calls back to Full Metal Jacket. Absolutely, 100%.
Interesting.
Plus back to
also,
Kyle.
Speaking of the helmets, I also love Adam Baldwin. I love Adam Baldwin in this, but I love on his helmet, he has, I am become death.
Oh,
yes.
Yep. Nice.
Yes.
I did not realize that. I didn't remember that.
I was trying to read it at one point. I saw that was like something death.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, that one's really cool. And I was like, oh, so look, now Oppenheimer.
So our next war movie will be Oppenheimer. Uh-huh. Vincent. What was Pyle's, what's his real name?
Vincent D'Onofrio?
Yeah, D'Onofrio.
D'Onofrio.
Oh, okay. I think he did a good job because I know he's not mentally handicapped. So
yeah.
He definitely was good acting. It was interesting that first section of like, you know, unless you know what's coming, you don't know what's happening kind of.
Well, I didn't.
Yeah. You're just there for the ride, which is like, that's not awful, but I would have liked to kind of have the heads up to watch Joker more than anything rather than Pyle.
Well, yeah,
I felt like I kind of paid more attention to Pyle and frankly Major than anybody else, and it's like, okay, I see Joker's, you know, the favorite little connection, Joker teaching Pyle to lace these shoes. Hey, Jojo Rabbit.
Hey, welcome. There it is. Perfect. I think we're done here. Right. I think that's it.
What we watched.
No, I agree. I think Vincent D'Onofrio did a good job too. I literally had in the notes though, because this was the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, that's lame that they're all treating him like he's an idiot. And then I was like, oh, wait, hold on a second. Like once Joker started teaching him to do things, I was like, wait a second, there's something,
I know.
There's something else going on.
Dude, he was teaching him like how to fold stuff. And I'm like, how did you get this far into
your,
like, how are you still alive?
Seriously. right? Like they waited to beat up on him for a while. Like the drill sergeant.
I don't think they should have ever beat up on him.
Well, I agree, but I think that it just happened later than I would have expected it to. Like, I would have expected the sergeant to start holding the entire team accountable, the entire squad accountable for his actions a lot earlier.
I don't understand the logic of beating him up unless they're under the impression he's doing this on purpose. Right. And he just thinks it's funny.
Yeah.
You guys is interacted with him. That's not what it is. So you're just beating up an idiot. That's all you're doing.
Yeah.
Yep. It's just like, God.
Is that not going to just make things harder to get through the next day?
Violence is the answer. And, you know, that also is a major theme
as
well.
Eye for an eye.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, though, Vincent D'Onofrio did do a good job with his, like, I'm just going to call it a Kubrick look at this point, because there's Clockwork Orange, there's Shining, like I feel like he personally auditions people and is like, all right, give me your crazy look and see it. Let me see your eyes.
Yes.
Not crazy enough.
They have it down.
Yeah, that was honestly, that was terrifying. It really, really was. He did a great job there. I mean, even his progression was interesting as well. Like, he definitely was a soldier who broke, but he broke the wrong way. And it's very tragic and very sad to know that, you know, maybe not in the exact same way, but that kind of stuff has happened before. And it's just too bad. It's too bad to happen.
One thing I liked about with the writing was the way they led up to it too. Cause they were talking about Lee Harvey Oswald, like, and shooting like the amazing shots and everything like that, and they're like, he was from the Marines and he just needed like the right motivation to become that excellent, and then they just like focus the camera on him as he's going crazy, and it's like, oh, that's like kind of deep. It's like the right motivation, fucking wrong kind of motivation here.
That's why I felt like this was kind of anti-war, like actually pretty anti-war, because I mean, I felt like that whole first part was just like, look at the people that they are, you know, arming and doing when they absolutely should not. Like, they should have better, I don't know, I guess self-control. I don't know. They, you know, and the life moves on after. It's just like, everyone knew that was going to be a problem, but they don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't care. And it's,
they're all racist.
Fodder for the machine. That's real, especially for in Vietnam is, hey, as many people as we can send out there, to get this job done, we're going to take you.
Especially since we lost also.
It was a tie.
Ooh, America.
It was a tie.
Yeah, totally, dude. Totally.
I also feel like anyone in our current day and age that watches this movie will just instantly get triggered and be like, they had no health care whatsoever. Like, no one's taking care of these people.
I don't have health care. Do I have health care? I don't think I have health care.
mental health care. I guess I'll focus on that.
But hey, I don't have that. To be honest, I don't have that either, man.
Yeah, not much has changed. But yeah, I also loved the progression of how Joker like stood up for what he believed in and didn't back down, and that got him promoted. Like, but while we were before he started teaching Pyle everything, like before he became the squad leader, I don't remember exactly what it was. Something about, was it the Christmas scene which was hilarious? One of my favorites. Happy birthday, dear Jesus. That was great.
That was amusing.
And
that
then,
yeah, but that is because he's not Christian.
Right. Right.
I think, well, actually, I don't know if it was that scene, but it was about it. It was about a religion.
Yes. Yes, exactly. It was about his belief system. And instead of backing down or instead of conforming, he, you know, stuck true to what he wanted or to what he believed. And, that is what actually got him the promotion, and because he had some backbone, and that just was, again, very interesting as well.
Yeah. I felt bad for, I think it was Snowball again. He got demoted during that scene.
Yep. Yep. Poor Snowball.
Sprinted over to get demoted and sprint back.
I think he just said, I, sir, or something.
Yeah, I think that might have been. That was the I time. Yes, it was.
Yeah, see?
I know. As soon as he said that.
I, sir.
question like, for right. you guys, for that training, one of the training montages, how fast do you guys think you could do the monkey bars? Because you're supposed to do them in under 10 seconds. I feel like if I could get it done, which is, I'm at like 70% that I could actually get it done. I feel like I could do it in about 30. Feel confident in that.
30 seconds. Well, Well, you got to think, the longer you hang there, the heavier you get.
True.
So 30 seconds. So, you know, if you pause, then everything starts getting heavier after that point. So 30 seconds might be a long time. I don't know. I don't remember how far it was.
Me either. Yeah. I used to be able to skip bars back in the day, too.
I was going to say, you know, I've climbed a lot of monkey bars and just things that aren't real monkey bars, but I treat them like monkey bars. So
is the floor lava is the main question.
Yes. I think that is the intended motivation.
Eight seconds.
Damn. All right.
Grab it with my feet one time, too, like a monkey.
An actual monkey bar. But the Q-tip boxing did look like a lot of fun. That was cool.
Yes, absolutely. I've never done those.
Me either.
Have you?
No.
Yeah, me either.
Jeffrey? Mm-mm. Okay. Well, then let's move on then.
I was going to say, let's do it. Looks like a good time. Looks like fun.
Yeah, so I mean, so the beginning part was very, it felt very blue, very kind of like less colors, less vibrant. I mean, I guess all of it felt less vibrant in coloring to me.
Mm-hmm.
Except for like the fire, basically.
Fire and the night had more colors.
Yes, the fire and the night. But so, yeah, we jumped up after he killed himself, which him killing himself was a great shot, too, because it was just like a centered. It's the complete opposite of Jojo Rabbit, mm-hmm. where it's like the death they didn't show us. And then in mm-hmm. this one, they just were like, you have to watch this, which I think it was a good choice. Like in the counter to the Jojo Rabbit, where it's like, it's not necessarily about, you know, the physical death. It's more about like the story mm-hmm. and the people and stuff. And this is, you know, we're not going to see this guy. You know, we're not connected to him. It's about something else.
Yeah.
And it's like about mm-hmm. the feeling. So it's like centered on it. And we watched it. And I thought that was good. I thought it was good.
And just like this just shows the and depicts the brutality of everything. So it's like we see every bit of it.
Yeah, absolutely. But then it also brings up an interesting conversation because you juxtapose that death with the one that Joker did at the very end, like his kill with the little girl that we didn't see her die. Like that was an off-screen death. We just heard the bang and we saw his reaction and we heard everybody else around him. So again, it's just interesting what we got to see and how we process as an audience and what we're supposed to interpret between those two deaths, because they're both significant deaths and they're both significant turnings for this, our main character for this guy. Just seeing one and how explicit we can be and how explicit and violent war can be, and then choosing not to show it at the most pivotal time.
I mean, well, this is why to me, it feels like two different movies because it felt like two different, you know, like the beginning was not about, it was barely about Joker. Like we got to see him. He was one of the main people, but it felt like it was more about the process of boot camp and military and what they do to you and like, you know, ripping your identity out, being one big unit, all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. So it was much more about that process and what it can lead to and what it pushes people to if you're not appropriate with it. You're not like, you know, within means. And then the second part was all about Joker. It was much, I mean, you know, you still got, you know, new characters and you got to know them a little bit and stuff. Yeah. And it was still commentary on war, but we followed Joker around specifically day-to-day lives like the whole time. And it was much more personal about him. So then it matched to Jojo to me with that second one where it's about, you know, Matthew Modine Joker versus what it actually led to, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Well, even in just saying that, if we were following Joker, in some ways it doesn't feel like we were still completely following Joker in the second half. Like, not like we follow main character. Like, I'd almost compare it to, like, say, Mad Max. Like, he was much of a main character as Mad Max was in Fury Road. Like, he was there, but we were also following these other characters pretty closely as well.
I agree. I can see you. It's more of an ensemble, but we still...
Like, we were following we were following him into these environments.
I don't think we went anywhere without him, but I agree with you. It's much more ensemble than super centered on him. They gave him another buddy because, hey, it worked in the first half, so we'll give you another buddy because what else are we going to do?
It's a buddy comedy. Yeah, that's what it is.
But one of the things that kind of, you know, I liked both of the two different parts for different reasons. Like, I enjoyed, you know, getting into the characters that Joker were interacting with and Joker. But then in the first part, I feel like we barely saw him, like, really do it. Like, the death happened, and we saw like a little bit of him, but we never really saw him. Like, how did it change him? Like, he was the same, felt like he was, you know, the same person, other than right. he was like, you know, more laid back because he wasn't in boot camp.
Right.
So it kind of felt like it didn't really necessarily to me build on the second half, other than when he got to the squad at the end, I was like, oh, hey, I remember Cowboy and the weird way they talked to each other about the dude just offering his sister and mom all the time. And I just was, it felt out of place to me. It didn't feel like natural banter. Some of the banter felt like, now, hey, say something about his mom. you want him to fuck your sister better than your mom, right? And I'm like,
what a good
what is
friend.
Going on, guys? What is going on?
Yes, sir.
Here?
Whatever you want me to say, sir. But I think, I kind of think that might be the point, right? Because we, you know, Joker saw a death and saw it, I mean, as up close as you can get, and it didn't really change him. And that, I think, is again, very interesting and a commentary on the soldier mentality and, you know, kind of maybe what it takes to be a Marine, or at least what it took to be a Marine in those times, because he did experience death firsthand, but he was still the same guy until he actually had to do it himself. Is what really pushed him to change.
Well, to me, I disagree with that. We did not see the same. We did not see the same people before and after, but we barely saw him before. So I can't tell you if he changed. He could have. It could have changed him. They just didn't tell us in any way, shape, or form. It was like, okay, that whole half's done. Nothing's carrying over from that other than the couple friends. Well, I'm not going to tell you if it has changed him. I'm not going to tell you if it hasn't. We just kind of just moved on and it was a new movie. Mm. Yeah. That's what it felt like to me. For me, like he was saying, oh, look, this didn't change him at all. He's the same person. Yeah. I'm like, he feels like a different person, but like how and like.
For me, he made
know.
The most dramatic change in like the first like 20 minutes. Like he made his like John Wayne joke at the very start. Then that immediately got shut down. And then he got pinned to help Pyle out. And then he was actually really nice and considerate helping him out and doing these things. But then after the entire boot camp stuff, then it was just completely back to normal, kind of like what I imagined he was like outside of like boot camp.
I assume as well, but yeah, it was drastically different.
Yeah, that's
the hair.
And again, that's what I love about Kubrick movies is you can have different interpretations of the character and of the story and what what you took from each scene and everything. Because I totally interpret it in a different way.
Hmm.
And then I also, I love, what the hell was with the karate stuff, in Vietnam? Like when he gets his camera stolen and there's just this, you know, arm waving and leg kicking and stuff that kind of felt a little out of place as well.
Anytime you hand off a camera, that's what you're supposed to do.
Oh,
Jeff knows. Jeff, see, that's your problem, Brandon. Okay. Oh God. Gotcha. I'm going to hand off a camera at some point.
Camera's not in my hands anymore. See?
And that was such a weird process too, because in my mind you just drive off. Why are you like stopping to like? I don't think
it was a don't even think about it, bro, kind of thing.
Yeah, yes.
but if I'm stealing something from somebody off the street,
yeah,
and I'm running away anyways, just run away.
Yeah, you don't stop and.
As I grab and sprint something, this is my intimidation.
I was actually considerate because he didn't want to mess him up.
Hey,
he's like, just so you know, if you come at me, I'm going to fuck you up.
I don't want to ruin the rest of your day. Okay, so just get over this.
Yeah, just let it go. It's mine now.
Don't let it break you. It's over. Done. Okay.
It was, yeah.
Go back to haggling your whores.
Me so horny.
They did like multiple scenes of it, of them just negotiating prostitution.
The first one was I want it for $5, not $10, and then the next time it was I want it for $10, not $15.
Well, then they were gonna give him a gun, so
yeah,
every dude there was gung-ho to bang her, and then they had a fight. Those are the scenes that I'm like, hey, if I'm not saying it didn't happen or it did happen, I just wasn't fun for me to. I was yeah. Cool. Okay.
And then the Alabama Black Snake made its appearance.
Yeah, that was weird too. That was weird too. And the whole thing was his dick wasn't big. Like that was the whole thing.
Yeah,
it wasn't too big.
Isn't too big.
It wasn't
for you.
Too buku.
It's the weirdest. That's just.
It was a very interesting scene.
And then God.
And then Jane came up and just took over anyways.
Yep. Jane was like, Adam Baldwin was like, no, you know what? Doesn't matter.
Mine.
I'm going to have sex first.
Mine first.
This was a prequel to Firefly, right?
Hell yeah, it was. Damn right it was. No, this is after Firefly. He came down to Earth that was and then fought in the Vietnam War.
How should he? I will say, though, from a Matt, you were mentioning earlier that you liked the cinematic, like, visuals and stuff like that. I think that's what you were saying. Anyways, that is one of my favorite things out of this movie, too. I was, like, noticing a lot of things. And being that it was shot on film, like, the fire and stuff, like, looked really good. Dude, like, really good.
I wrote
good.
That down. The freaking, the fire, especially after he killed the, I guess, infant child, they had the fire, the buildings or whatever in the background.
Uh-huh.
That shit was fucking gorgeous.
Yeah. And, gorgeous. And it looked all, everywhere they went, like production design wise, everywhere they went, it looked like it was all practical flames and fire going on.
Dude,
the only things that, I was going to say that looked a little off was like,
I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Was when they were shooting bullets and it looked like just random squibs going off all over the building. Like, it looked like they weren't aiming at a goddamn thing. They were just like spinning their guns all over the place.
And I cannot comment on audio because I listened to it on a shitty hotel TV. So it sounded like shit to me. Well, it didn't sound like shit, but it sounded like, I don't know, the gunshots sounded like tinny. They sounded
muffled and like tinny. Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe it wasn't just me.
But they had an older sound aesthetic to it.
I'm in a hotel. Yes. Oh, dude, they had an older vibe. Had a long lens zoom or
on pile.
Like, oh, hey, they had slow motion multiple times. They had slow motion in just in the middle of their movie with a slow like it's God. I'm trying to think what that one them running on the beach. Whatever that slow motion noise was.
Oh, Baywatch.
Oh, maybe
are you talking about Baywatch style?
But I was watching Baywatch the other day.
One of the most innovative things I saw them do was when they got into one of the towns and they were all the troops were moving up and like hiding behind things. The one camera shot was following behind them the entire time while they kept moving up, and new people would walk in front of the frame. And I was like, I made a note saying that if they would have shot that today, it would have fit right in, except it would have been not as jittery. Like, it would have been like Emmanuel Lubezki or somebody shot it, and it's just like very smooth and floaty as it's going through.
A lot cleaner. And I love how dirty that shot was. Like, I love how gritty it felt and how we didn't necessarily like stay with one person. We were just like kind of creeping behind everybody as they were continuing to progress forward. And that was just incredible.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
They had a lot of long
one-ers and just like, or him walking after he needed to go find whatever the 2-5 or all that was confusing.
Just tracking shots.
When he was walking down the street and they're like backing up basically with him and a bunch of tanks, trucks, like they had not to 1917 level, I think, but like, in the direction of 1917 level of prep and, you know, moving parts and which I thought were great. Them all running in unison, chanting, I thought were fantastic. Those were long ass shots too. He had a lot of fantastic, visual,
And also, I mean, I know, that Kubrick is, you know, famous or infamous for doing, hundreds of takes until he gets it right, until he gets it the way he wants it. So I just wonder how long production was and how many takes it took to get some of those wonders, especially the one you were talking about with all of the tanks and, you know, outside it, with the open sky and with all of, you know, the actual elements of nature and you can't control a whole lot of stuff. Just to reset that just sounds atrocious. And
I feel like less takes for stuff like that because it would just cost so much to do it over and over.
He doesn't care.
But versus reactions.
Do you think that man gave a shit?
I don't know who's paying him money. Like who's someone can say no.
I believe it looks like Full Metal Jacket was exclusively filmed in the latter in Vietnam. Scenes were filmed in sets built in the UK itself. Practical photography and film commenced August 27th, 1985 to August 5th or August 8th, 1986.
Oh, a whole year.
So, yeah. Yeah. So expensive.
I mean, yeah. Expensive and long, and yeah, it just sounds like a brutal atmosphere to be around.
Like an Alabama black snake. Expensive and long. That's what the joke was.
I got you. I wish I would have got it right away, because that actually was pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, even everything was so practical, and I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. everything.
What do you think the budget was? Did they have to?
For 1985, budget wise, I'm going to go $25 million.
25?
Yes.
I think more. But that's that number is influencing me, because I know nothing about that, what they spent on movies that far back. But I'd say, based on your answer influencing me, I'm going to say like $60 million then.
$30 million.
Yeah.
A year in Vietnam cost $30 million.
Wow.
You're still wrong, Jeff. I mean, Brandon.
I don't care. I'm close.
Yeah.
Horseshoes and hand grenades.
You beat Jeff. Did that really make you feel better?
Yes.
It's like you beat Pyle in the race. Ooh, good job.
Whoa.
All right, we got all that. $30 million. $30 million.
That's like my handicap. My handicap's $30 million, give or take.
You nailed it. Anyways, Jeff.
Hey, Jesus. I'm impressed. It was only $30 million.
Yeah.
For a year in Vietnam shooting. I figured they would spend more on film alone.
You said they did actually shoot in Vietnam? I thought you said something about the UK earlier.
Some of it was studio. Some of the stuff was studio. Some of it was, I think, in Vietnam. I can read the whole quote.
And then
again.
Didn't I see in the credits that it said special thanks to some actual barracks, some military base that didn't, did they actually shoot on a military base?
I don't know. I typed in Full Metal Jacket shooting dates, even though I did misspell shooting. although primarily set in Vietnam and UK, Full Metal Jacket was exclusively filmed in the latter country, which is UK. The Vietnam sets were filmed. Vietnam scenes were filmed on sets built in the UK itself. Principal photography. So I was correct. I was incorrect. Mm-hmm. No time in Vietnam.
They just did
in the UK. So 30 again. But hey, UK is more expensive, homie. Granted, mm-hmm. it depends on mm-hmm. where in the UK. Scotland, that'd be sweet. But interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. They didn't shoot in Vietnam.
Right. Right.
They sure made it look like it.
It didn't feel. I was about to say, dude. I believed it.
Absolutely. The
production.
Yeah.
Production design. Costumes I thought were great.
Yeah, costumes were insane. Yeah, the production design was just astounding. I mean, again, veering towards the 1917 level of production, where it's just, you know, giant demolished buildings, and the amount of fire, the amount of pyrotechnics, you know, and that was back in the 80s when there really wasn't any or as much CGI, obviously. But I don't know how much, you know, was helped by computers or graphics or anything like that.
Especially if they did a lot of set stuff.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, to me, it looked all practical. I didn't see one thing that I thought was CG in it.
When they were in like what I was calling the press room or whatever, when he was talking to the other writers, I was like, the background kind of looks weird there. And I think other than that, I don't think I ever went, oh, is that CG?
Right.
Yeah.
But I just assumed everything looked
It could have also been... Take it as you will. It could have been like in the studio, and then they put projection in the background.
True.
That might have been why it felt a little off.
That is very true. Maybe, I guess, in my mind, I just say CG because nobody does that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So fake is what I should have said, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, take it as you will. It's like technically
I really want to point out an amazing shot that I absolutely was in love with that – I think they were on a dolly track or whatever, but it was right before the sniper. Yeah. Cause I think the dude got shot by the sniper when he picked up the toy after this, but they followed him and he was outside of a building, and then he walked into the building. The camera tracked with him, whatever, moved leftward, parallel to him. And then they went through the building, and the color palette changed. from like a darker blue cool to the warm fire on the inside. And then he went back outside and it switched back. And I thought that was, I fucking loved that. I backed that one up and watched that once or twice.
Yeah, that was
really good.
That was really cool. I also, another sunset or sunrise shot with the helicopter. That was just incredible. Just the incredible forest and jungle. And then you get that sunset with the silhouette of the helicopter going across it. That was just amazing.
Yeah,
dude.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think they did a good job with it. I think that also like doing a lot of the sunset and like warmer colors versus cooler colors, for some reason that translates to me and makes it more believable to me that they were in like Vietnam or something versus the sun being straight overhead and harsh or something. I don't know. It just made it feel exotic having those different colors. And when I think of other Vietnam movies like Apocalypse Now and stuff like that, they still have that some of those similar color palettes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even to go back to some of the acting and some of the writing, during this second half, the whole interview scene as well, I thought was super interesting and super entertaining because you got to see these like civilians basically who don't really know how to talk to the camera. They're kind of awkward. And then they even start to open up. Like the more they talk, the more that they like get excited about war and about killing and about, you know, what they believe in, they started to open up and blossom a little bit. And that was really interesting as well. But also a choice not to show any kind of like footage, like any kind of, sometimes we'll see like the, you know, like an 8mm insert or something like that of them talking or, you know, the grainy kind of stuff that they would capture, you know, on location.
Heard. It felt very prequel to Civil War. That those scenes, they're like the head on.
Yeah.
It had another vibe of when the dude died and they went around to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like saying like, you know, better you than me. At least he died for something, you know, that stuff. That had that same vibe, which I did like. It was a little little abstract. Because I'm trying to think, we had some fourth wall break, but not as much as that. Like, literally, they just put the camera in the middle and just were like, next, next, next. I would also like to know if any of that was improvised, because, I mean, it was good acting. Some of it felt like it could have been, like, the fourth or fifth thing they've said, and they've just, like, rattled through, like, three or four things.
Sure.
And they're just saying random crap.
Yeah, that would be interesting to know for sure. Again, like, how tight does Kubrick keep it? I don't know. I've never heard of anything about being allowed to improvise or not improvise. I haven't heard anything one way or the other, so that would be cool to know. Plus another line that I like, or a couple lines that I liked, were in the second half, like, how's it gonna look if you get killed wearing a peace sign? Because yeah, that's, you know, hilarious, that's ironic, and that's the style of humor that Joker has, and I love it. And then again, him explaining it to the other general, you know, something about the duality of man, like he doesn't really know, he just knows that it kind of pisses people off.
Yeah, that peace sign though came into play again towards the end for me, in the sense of like they kept pointing it out like that, and then he was the one that killed that woman that was a sniper.
Yep.
And then everyone was being like, everyone was kind of reacting in a way that they were just like, "Whoa, dude, that was fucking intense. I can't believe you did that."
Yeah.
So it's interesting that he was the one to cross the line despite having like the peace sign and being who he is.
Yeah. Speaking of intense, I thought Kubrick did intense really well. Like the other, like 1917 was suspenseful, it was very intense, but in like, it felt like a different way it was intense. I guess maybe him being like stabbing in 1917, him after seeing his baby mama and then running and like attacking the guy that's like drunk and his stabbing his buddy. But it was like the whole movie, well, a lot of the movie in for Full Metal Jacket, and I thought he did suspense very well.
Yeah,
build up to like something happening.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that entire sniper scene, thoroughly enjoy sniper scenes from like all war movies. I think they're always super cool and interesting because there's always like this calm, and then there's also like this real like brutality to it, and like kind of fucked upness to it.
Yeah,
like all the smart snipers fucking like try and tease people out of their spots, and it just gets crazy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and the whole intensity thing comes from because at any point something could happen. And that's built from, you know, scenes where one of the commanders or one of the I don't know what their ranks are, but one of the squad leaders was going out, you know, checking one of the ruined buildings and just stepped on a landmine, right? Mm-hmm. And just dies. And so like it literally at any point you could die. And so there's always that air of tension and there's always that air of, you know, this might be my last breath. And, you know, you couple that in with actors who, oh, hi.
Oh my goodness.
That was my dog.
Yeah. What was he?
That was weird. He was asleep.
Did he have a bad dream?
Poor pup.
I guess. Wow.
But yeah, you couple that in with actors who really, you know, are kind of, you know, thrown into the shit and kind of put through the Kubrick method where you just have to do grueling days, take after take after take, really kind of wears them down and wears you out. And it really shows.
Agreed.
Another amazing camera scene was when they were going to get their payback after like three or four of them had crossed the battlefield and they threw the smoke grenades and we're kind of, you know, we're going through the smoke and then we're going up and into the building. Like that was masterful. Absolutely astounding to watch. I love that one.
Yep. I agree with that. I love what during that sniper, like them sneaking up, I really loved such the weirdest thing. I'd like the green doors or blue doors. What was it? It was like blue doors that were just all shot to hell when Adam Baldwin was up there and then yelling back.
Yeah.
I just really liked the look of the doors. I don't know why. It was a really random one, but that's roughly when I was like, God, I really do like this production design.
I mean, speaking on that production design and that like last scene, did you guys notice that the windows had like really interesting, intricate shapes and patterns and stuff? It reminded me of the patterns like of the like rugs and The Shining and stuff.
No, I did not catch
they,
that.
They weren't quite like the hexagonal or like shapes that were in The Shining, but like they were a lot of like diagonal lines and patterns like engulfing the entire like huge square window. It was really interesting.
That's really cool. I wonder, it feels everything that Kubrick does is intentional. So I feel like that has to be there for some reason, whether that's to, you know, connect it to The Shining for whatever reason, or if that's just because it looked cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me see if I can find a picture of it.
Another kind of random ones I liked was the dude shooting people in the helicopter. It was because I just thought he was like randomly shooting. I didn't realize.
That's what I thought too.
Until they did the other shot. I assume he did different footage because like they were flying forward and you couldn't see anybody in the background as they flew up to it. So I wonder if he did it intentionally to not make sure there wasn't anything but landscape until then he flipped it over and you could see the people and stuff.
Yeah, that would make sense. But yeah, how heinous and just shows the brutality of some of these guys who just couldn't care less who they kill as long as they get some kills in, as long as they get, you know, what they think is the job done. Like, holy shit.
Brandon Glaskin.
What did you guys think of the the title drop?
I loved it.
Yeah. I didn't know what a Full Metal Jacket was like until this movie. And I still, after he like kind of used it in context, I was like, that's referring to like the bullets, I guess. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, I didn't know that's where the term came from.
Yeah. Yeah. The magazine being full.
Full Metal Jacket.
Mm-hmm. And his delivery on it too was just horrifying, super creepy. It's just you know, broken yep. individual.
Yeah,
who was snapped.
It's so interesting. I could have seen the whole movie. Like I this is the first time I saw it. I did not know at what point it like begins and ends when I've seen little snippets of this movie. But I thought the whole thing was going to be revolved around this Pyle character. Like, I thought it was going to be a slow trickle to, like, insanity. Mm-hmm. And then
it's definitely the one that like, people talk about more.
Yeah, well, I see. Yeah, most of the references are from that, like, boot camp portion of the movie. I don't recall seeing any of the other ones, like, typically. Or I didn't know they were part of the movie.
Yeah. No, but, I mean, a ton of the referencing and the way people talk about it is just the first part, and not necessarily the second part. Which, I don't know, I think I might have liked the first part. I don't know. The second part might have been better. I think both of them, I just wanted more of a fleshed out side, frankly, rather than two kind of felt like, to me, two rushed stories on either side, rather than one of them fleshed out. Especially because they didn't feel super connected to each other when I'm watching it, so it felt like they restarted. I had another lighting question, or at least if anyone else noticed, when they were going back and forth with John Wayne in the bunk, the lighting was so soft, and it was like it felt like there was gigantic like lens flares, kind of, where all the lights were just stretched way the hell out. And I was very confused by it because it felt very out of place. And I wasn't really positive what was going on.
The lights were stretched. Are you talking about the flares themselves?
No, it was like they're inside of a bunk. They were going back and forth. Maybe.
I'm trying to think. Like, I think I know what you're referring to with that description, but I'd need to see something to know.
Yeah,
for
unfortunately,
sure.
I can't present a photo.
What scene in particular? Maybe I can look something up.
It was the one right before the base got attacked, right?
I don't know if you're going to be able to see this.
When they were talking about the 1,000-yard stare and how Joker doesn't have it.
Can you see this in any way, shape, or form?
Oh, you disappeared.
I saw it until it disappeared.
Okay, so you're talking about that little star effect from the lights then. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. On all of them, it's like that.
Yeah.
And it just felt very, very soft, like we were watching a soap opera or something. And just that scene, it was the only time I noticed it. And it felt very, and I didn't understand what he was trying to get.
Was that a night scene?
Yes, but they were like inside. And I do think they got attacked after this. So I think it might have been at night or transitioned into a night scene at least.
I'm trying to see if I can find.
Was that on IMDb?
Mm-hmm.
This one.
Oh, so I was thinking the boot camp era, like area and stuff. Yeah, that looks like a lens characteristic to me.
Yeah, and I just don't understand. I don't personally remember seeing it anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why he chose to do this scene with that out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then all the close-ups looked like it was a soap opera, like very soft lighting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe
something to do with this was the real last time that there was peace, that Joker saw peace before like getting thrown into the shit. Because this was the conversation that they were having right before the base got attacked, and then he gets transferred to go
to
the
front
lines.
There's another day after that though. Like it's not like he's in war the rest of the time. You know, there's a section, you know.
Yeah, it's so brief.
Yeah, but
though.
That's just stretch. I mean I hear you, but that just feels like a stretch to me.
Yeah, I don't know. It could have been, honestly, as far as I know, it could have been a gimmick because, I mean, there are plenty of movies these days. Like, think of J.J. Abrams. Anything he shoots anamorphic because he's got those crazy anamorphic lens flares and stuff. It's like it could have been a stylistic thing that people were playing with at the time.
Yeah, just one scene out of nowhere. That's what it just was like. It didn't match any of the other stuff, really. That at least that I noticed. I didn't know if you guys were like, oh, yeah, you know, I noticed that. Here and this here, so that's what I was just wondering.
No, yeah, I did notice that at any other time.
Yeah, no, I'm not 100% sure. Like there are also, I mean, they shot on Ariflex.
Did they?
So, I mean, that's pretty standard for like film cameras, but nothing notable as far as like interesting lensing or anything. They used Zeiss Super Speeds, Nikon lenses, which I mean. Is interesting that they have that listed. So maybe they threw on some like old vintage, like photo Nikon lenses onto the camera or something.
Maybe.
Cause I do know like most of those like flares that aren't like, they have like inconsistent patterns and it's like kind of weird like that has come from like older, honestly cheaper, SLR lenses and stuff like that. So even from like say your phone, sometimes you get flares like that that are like inconsistent, like not a perfect horizontal, like curve or something.
Mm.
So it's like I'm hesitant to use the term cheaper lenses, but it's just like some that have like really unique characteristics that aren't, haven't typically been viewed as like beautiful or whatever.
Right. Right.
Anything else from you guys?
Here are a couple of stills that I just love that we were talking about.
For the video watchers.
For all of our video watchers. Yay, videos.
Yeah, that's the shot I was referring to when I talked about some gorgeous shots. That one was memorable to me.
We'll describe every single photo as well.
This one has a sun, but it's only showing like a quarter of it, maybe like two thirds of it.
Mm-hmm. This one does definitely. If you can imagine the Top Gun volleyball scene, it's basically that.
But men climbing things instead of
men, and instead of men climbing each other.
Exactly. Exactly. Things versus each other. And then this one near the near the very end.
Yeah. And some of these have like, it's really stunning. It's really interesting looking at these visuals, because a lot of them have like vibes to like more modern cinematography techniques. Like this reminds me of like Sicario or like 1917, things that like Roger Deakins has done. Whereas the past one you mentioned, like Top Gun, I guess Top Gun was in the 80s, but
Top Gun 2 though.
Maverick, yes.
Maverick definitely pulled from it.
But as far as these war movies, it's like, it's really innovative stuff.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah, that's the one I was talking about. Well, I mean, I was talking about a bunch, so. I really like the framing of when the guy's dead on the tarp and they're all standing around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. See, I don't like that I have to scroll from the top every time I go to a new picture. Because I came across that pretty close to where I thought that last photo was, but. Anyway, not that one.
Well, I mean, that's the one I was talking about.
Oh, really?
But yeah. The dead guy's on the tarp and they're all standing around.
Oh, yeah, there it is right there. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
All right. You're welcome, video watchers. the song of the Mickey Mouse song was.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I assume that they're going for like the innocence. Kind of like, remember when we're all children and now we're fucking grown ass adults murdering people?
I interpreted that as look how nonchalant and jovial everybody is while we're in a fucking war. Like we're able we're able to pull from our childhood and we're able to do, you know, this happy go lucky song that's about, you know, friendship and, you know, innocence. And you know, you put that right behind, I mean, seconds behind Joker killing somebody, you know, and he's singing along. And, you know, it's just this, the nature of desensitizing these humans about murdering human beings.
So, honest to God, I personally did not, because you clearly looked at it the other side of, I didn't think that shot was representing them actually doing that. That felt more like a... Well, how do I say, more like a metaphor-ish than a real life, those guys were in the middle of a war singing down the street. I thought it was more of like a representation
than
them actually doing it.
Okay.
Because that would be dumb as fuck if they're singing in the middle of the night out loud as a group while they walked places.
While they're marching,
I feel like that gets
them
killed.
Right.
That's what I thought. Gets them killed.
It is reckless. You're right. And it's, Jeff, you want to weigh in?
I mean, I'm somewhere in between. I thought they were singing it, but I was in my head, I was also like, that's kind of dumb. Like, but I also didn't understand. Yeah, I was trying to put together reasons and I didn't quite understand why that song was there. I didn't know if it was like something that maybe they had, like, you know, they said, you guys said that they brought in that major guy that had experience in the military and whatnot. Is that a thing that he maybe said that people have sang? I don't know.
Maybe. Interesting.
I have no idea.
Maybe
I have no idea.
It was a reference to that being a child. And they were like, we assume this was her favorite song. And now we're going to sing it while we hunt down more of these and kill them.
I wonder how much that and the that and the other Mickey Mouse figurines, I wonder how much those cost.
Where were the other Mickey Mouse figurines?
In the writer's room. in the background, there were a couple of Mickey Mouse figurines.
Mm, I didn't notice them. Sorry.
It's all good. Yeah, they're it's okay. I'm glad I don't hold it against upset. You. It's fine.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, this was, I thought this was very powerful. So yeah, if you guys are good, I think we could probably move on to grade this thing.
So real quick, I don't know if Arlie Ermley was the consultant, but he definitely was all improvised lines because Kubrick was going to write them, but then he was so impressed with some of his improvised lines that he just let him do whatever he wants.
Nice.
Granted, so this is from IMDb. So
yeah, and it's interesting because I was going to bring that up too because I scrolled down a little further. And another one of these tidbits, trivia, says it's a common misconception that all of his dialogue was improvised.
This one had more helpful thumbs up. So clearly that one's real.
How many thumbs down did that one have? Because this one only has 16.
This one has 16 also.
Oh, shit.
But 1,400 thumbs ups.
This one's just got 1K.
Ooh,
one
cake. One person caked it.
400 people did not scroll. Keep scrolling.
Oh, Jeff, Matthew Modine, Stranger Things.
Oh yes, okay. That's what I was gonna say earlier before we started recording.
He looks so much like Becker. Forgot what his real name is. Cheers.
Oh yes, yep.
He's in Cheers. Then,
no, he's not. But he looks like that dude. Whatever his name is.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Sam in Cheers. What's his name? Oh, God.
Ted Danson.
He looks so much like him. Holy shit.
I can see the resemblance.
With hair. Without hair, he looks like nobody but an alien.
Interesting choice, speaking of no hair, to open the movie with everyone getting their head shaved, but no credits also. Like, that's just usually is where you would put all of your opening credits, and there weren't any. And I just, again, everything that Kubrick did was so meticulous and thought out and planned that I can't help but just wonder why.
Mm. I'll give him a call.
Please do.
I don't know. I did like the opening where they did the hair because it was just, you know, we kind of was with them in boot camp from start to finish.
Well, to me, it was an emphasis on like the psychological aspect of that alone. Like, yep, there were some people that had, like, we were all close up on all their faces and there were different reactions and emotions for each of those moments.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm pulling some sort of meaning from it. I mean, I remember seeing someone being pretty upset and then other people just being like, shit. And then, you know, the usual, yep.
the usual. All right. That's it. Time to grade. Motherfucking grade in time.
Grade in time.
Whoa. Brandon, that was not the fucking tune I was going to do. So shut your mouth while I'm singing.
Grading time.
Okay?
Grading time.
Motherfucking grading time. Grading time.
Grading time.
Suck it.
I'm pumped that I don't have to go first.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not ready either. So
I think I roughly know where I want it to go, but
yeah. How much is our average for this month?
I know the month kind of, yeah, it's dependent
on
this.
I'm not even looking at that. That is not allowed. Okay. Be true to yourself. Be true.
Be true to what you feel and what you believe, what you know to be true. All right, cool.
How much to keep it in the nines?
4.
Obviously it can't go under a 9.
Well, we have a 10 in the last rating. So it's like, there could be some lower 9s or
absolutely,
like higher 8s to keep it in that average.
I think this was really powerful. It was an intense expose on the Vietnam War, where it really threw the audience kind of through what it takes to mentally numb yourself in order to become a killing machine. And then it drops you right in the hellscape that was Vietnam in the 60s. I thought it was an incredible compilation from the composition of shots, the color schemes like we've talked about, the dramatic lighting. It was all just really outstanding. I personally really liked the acting. I thought everyone kind of fell into their characters and was believable. No one felt like they were pushing it. No one felt like they were acting, you know, overacting, anything like that. And then I've noted that I really like the writing, and I found it to be more comical maybe than it was intended to be. But it just kind of, you know, it tickled me, especially early on when he's just when the drill sergeant is just degrading everybody in whatever he thinks is the worst way possible. And it's just was very humorous to me. And I think that there was
your range
a lot
of humor is interesting to me.
Yeah, thanks.
It's like put in a scene of the Heil Hitler, Heil Hitler, Heil Hitler, Heil Hitler. And then someone saying, you fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Just a plethora of insults. Yeah. I'm starting to learn more about your humor, Brandon.
Thanks, man.
It's scary, right? I know.
Yo, Matt, your background is doing like what Brandon's body does.
I know. Unless you guys connection really dropped, I think it might be mine.
But yeah, the humor definitely, I mean, yeah. There's also like, you know, camera humor as well, where we're seeing like, you know, the soldiers marching
classic
through
camera jokes.
Right. And then
the camera's shaking because it's laughing.
and then it pans over and Pyle's, you know, following behind with his pants down. Like there's a lot of, nonverbal humor infused in this, in this whole thing throughout. Plus then again, the kind of, you know, the dichotomy of man seeing, you know, how you can be happy and make jokes and still kind of keep your sense of humor and wits about you during a war and when you're, you know, getting shot at and shooting at people who are intending to kill you for no reason than, hey, you're different than me. You know, and then its messages and its themes of anti-war or this is what war is or this is what war does to people is very strong. And it's a very, very interesting movie. It's very well made. I'm glad we finally got to do a Kubrick movie. I'd love to do more because I think he's a very powerful filmmaker.
I do agree with that.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, honestly, I got a lot of enjoyment out of this. I don't know where I want to put it. I honestly am struggling.
That was my guess, Jeff.
That was mine. Guess, Jeff. I put it there first.
No. I know that's what I'm saying. It's just we had the same guess. That's why I'm like, okay. Damn it.
Sorry.
Sorry, Brandon. Go ahead.
No, you're good. You're good. Because
I was getting there to take a guess, right? Yeah, and then it was there already.
Because I do. I mean, we're talking about Jojo Rabbit last week, and I really enjoyed that one, and that's a solid 9 for me. I think this one is technically more put together than that one was, but I don't know if I liked it necessarily personally more than that. So you guys might have actually nailed it with a 9 flat. That's kind of where the range I'm going. Was either a 9 or like at 9.25, but I think I liked him about the same, but just for different reasons.
Interesting.
That's fair.
I don't know.
Jeff gets to go next.
Oh, right, I have to go next?
Yeah, you do.
But why?
But why?
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, there are definitely, I think the visuals are the things that I appreciated the most out of this movie. I did like it. But it's now that we're in the grade, it's like, you know, I have to compare it to some like other movies that on all the multiple levels, right? So, I think, gosh, because even I do appreciate the more in-depth writing like you're talking about, Brandon, but the halves thing just weirded me out where it was like, felt like it was one story in the beginning and then one story at the end. But then as a whole, I can see what they were aiming for, but it didn't just, it didn't vibe for me as much as it probably did for you. And like, you know, this is also like, I'm equating to how like, say like writing styles and filmmaking styles, like Christopher Nolan, like just vibes extra for me. Mm-hmm. So, it's just on maybe a touch on the other end of that. But God, I think I have to put it at, I think I have like the visuals and everything added together. I think I have to put it at an 8.
Ooh, 8 flat.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Like I did 8 enjoy flat. It, but it's not necessarily a movie I am particularly rushing back to watch again. I will someday again, but I don't feel like I need to see it again immediately.
That's fair. That's fair. All right. Mateo is turn. Jeff did not take my number. Whoop, whoop. I am a little torn because if I just look at it from like just walking out of there and how I felt about this, 8 honestly to me does feel reasonable. I just walked away with it being like, you know, there's the good stuff, but like the bad stuff, it did feel like two different stories. It didn't feel like super connected to me. I would have loved to just pick one or the other and flush it out personally more. You know, some of the dialogue and stuff was just I was just fucking, it was beyond like what they were saying and stuff, which was fucking obnoxious. Some of the dialogue I felt a little cheesy. I understood what they're going for. I liked what he was aiming for. I know like people do love the writing. It wasn't my personal favorite. As a whole, I mean, I thought the acting was really good. Then the technical side of it was fantastic. I thought the technical side was like pretty damn outstanding. And it's like, it definitely makes me want to watch more Kubrick. Like the visual wise, like we were saying, was very breathtaking. Damn near, like I said, the one shot from Jojo Rabbit should be in film history. You know, there was probably three, maybe four shots from this movie that I was like, oh, well, that should be in film history. Like that was absolutely gorgeous. So I'm going to go it basically in between the two, because I do think if I just came out of here and went, how did I feel about it? 8 would feel appropriate to me, like right around. It would be the same as Silver Lining Playbook to me. But I think technical wise, this was better than Silver Lining Playbook. So I'm going to go on the same level to me as Revenant.
I had 8.5. I'm gonna go 8.5. Damn it!
I know. I had to change pages because I could see you guys doing stuff.
And yeah, you switched it around on me. You were like talking it down for a bit, so I was like, "Damn it! I have to lower my rating." Because I had it originally at 8.5.
I was talking the bad stuff before the good stuff because I do really feel like, you know, it doesn't make me want to watch it again necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like unless I'm like, you know, watching it solely for the cinematography and to be like, hey, look at this, you know, referencing this, hey, look how he did this, that would be realistically the only reason I'd want to like have an urge to watch it again necessarily. And you know, I didn't hate it by no means. I'm not like, oh, that's disgusting, get it out of here, you know, anything like that. I thought it was a pretty damn good movie. That's probably one of the best movies that year, period. And then, but just I came out with the vibe, and I'm sure, you know, 10 years ago, all of the, you know, the racist words and names and stuff I would be more chill with, or, you know, I don't know. It was just like, I was just like, God, people need to chill out. Like, I don't know people necessarily. If I know people who talk like this, it's people I don't want to be around. And it's just like, it's just not, you know, it feels like he did it and then cranked it to 11 and was like, this is how. Cause like, you know, we talk shit and stuff too. You know, I tell people to go fuck themselves and stuff, like, went jokingly cause I love them, but I'm not like, you know, you're fucking guap and shit. Like, I'm not like, that's just like, God, it's just ridiculous.
No,
and
all, I feel,
and just how fucking horrible they were, the Vietnam people and stuff. Anyways. But so that's why I'm in the middle, because it technically was fucking gorgeous, but I walked out of it and was just like, ugh.
Yeah. Whatever. And well, that's the thing about this movie. Like, I'll probably forget about a lot of the things I didn't care for, like the weird lines and stuff. But the things I will remember were amazing. And that's a lot of the visuals and the underlying artistic message of just like how, like the psychological elements of how this war affected people. It's like, those are the things that will stick with me.
And I wonder if we had watched this one first, if it would be a higher grade.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Or, or if this would be kind of still the same level and the other stuff might be higher because, you know, I just had much more better time watching it and consuming it. But all right, that is the end of, well, hypothetically, the end of War Month. And we now have officially the highest rated the highest rated movie club by a freaking long shot.
By a long shot. These were three really good picks.
It's averaged 9.5, and then the closest was like 8.5 or something like that, I think.
Yeah, the next closest was 8.59, which was our early America month. That was back in November. We had Django Unchained, The Hateful Eight, and There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, I mean, these are three good, I mean, you know, I like, it's fun to watch Kubrick, period.
Yeah.
You know, we got to sneak in Shining at some point, you know. I think I would probably have the same vibes, the same feels as this, as I would with 2001 Space, you know, what is it, Space Odyssey?
2001 Space Odyssey.
Is it one 2001? That seemed weird to me because it was so old. all right.
Sweet. Awesome. That was a fun month for sure. A lot of good picks here. If you guys have any recommendations, get them in now for July or for future movie clubs, for individual movies or for groupings, any categories you'd like us to talk about. We'd love your input. We'd love to talk about what you guys like and what you want us to hear us talk about. So let us know anywhere, because we've got lots of things going on all over social media. We've got obviously our YouTube page. Thanks for everyone joining here. So go like, subscribe to all of our channels. You can get us wherever you get your podcasts. But until then, enjoy the movies, and we'll be talking to you later.
Bye.